I'd like to welcome you all to the Visual Arts Center. My name is Leslie Scheel, and I'm one of the teachers here. And I told the advanced poetry students who were at the craft session that I can think of nothing better than getting together on a hot, late afternoon with friends and talking about poems. Maybe one step better is getting together in an early evening when it's cooler and talking with friends about poems. I am so glad that you are all here in what is to me a magical, enchanted space. If you could just imagine that during these last 2 weeks, the place has been filled with little kids making things and their parents taking deep breaths on the stairs and heading out to have coffee and just dropping them off and going, that kind of thing. See, that's what art can do, and that's part of the layering of this space at this time. I am going to ask for one favor before we begin. People who have been in my classes know that I always ask this. I'm going to ask you to please turn off your cell phones. And even though we learned in the craft session that sometimes it's really good to break rules and do other things, I'm going to hold to this one for tonight because I think what can happen is that we could create a space out of space. And we could tell the rest of the world that no matter what else is happening, we get to do this now. And we get to listen for, in Steve's words in the last session, that river of words. And so I'm going to ask us to do that. Thank you. I do want to thank a couple of people before we start and introduce a couple of people. The reading and the craft session and books that students received were all made possible by such a marvelous patron of poetry, Carol Weinstein, and we are just so grateful for her vision, her wit, her way of seeing right through things and what needs to happen, and for her bringing Steve Scafidi back to Richmond. And so let's all give her a hand. She could hear it on the tape. Steve's books will be for sale. There are copies that you could look at this table, and then down at the front desk is where the Visual Arts Center is selling them. I'd like to introduce Stephanie Fedor, the Executive Director of the Visual Arts Center, and Lizzie Oliver, the Director of Development. Thank you for all of the behind-the-scenes work that you do to make this place work for little kids to people in their 90s, maybe more. So thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. Also want to introduce Kathleen Kelly, who is back here in Richmond, married to Steve Scafidi. It's so good to have you back in town. And my spouse, Michael Keller, who has dealt with a whole lot of crabbiness in the last week. I'm sorry. Okay. That kind of thing. All right. So thank you. You know, thank you for all of that. Yeah. Okay. In the past 2 weeks, with students both at the Visual Arts Center and in a brand new summer poetry class at VCU, we've looked at the work of Steve Scafidi, in part for preparation for his visit today. One of the things that we've done, because Steve was the first person to tell me that the title of a poem is a secret entranceway. It's a secret gateway, and poets get to decide how they want to bring their readers in. It's one of our decisions, and that always felt so enchanting to me, the secret gateway. So one of the things that we've done in both groups is gone around our tables, around the circle, and read out loud the titles in the table of contents of his four books. I saw the energy in the room change both places, here at Visual Arts and in the new class at VCU, when students said aloud those titles, laughing at some of them, deeply sorrowful with others. It was just amazing to see the physical effect that reading a good line of poetry are walking through a gate that is open and inclusive rather than keeping people away, what that can do to a person's body and what that can do to a community. I saw people go giddy with joy. I saw us read about reckless abandon. I heard people almost break with tenderness and then stop before reading the name, let's say, Emmett Till. I asked students to circle the titles that were the gateways they wanted to pass through at that moment. And so here are their choices, and I had my own. Here are their choices. From Steve's first book, From Sparks from a 9-Pound Hammer, Drinking Gift Whiskey, Ferocious Ode, Ode to And, Naked Sunlit Afternoon with Vultures, Icarus on the Beach in the Afternoon. For the 8th annual celebration of St. Cecilia, the patron saint of music, Percival, Virginia, November 1999, I was there. Cherie, who just entered the room, said, I was there. 10-letter word for a lucky man. I'd open the book, show them what it looked like on the page, the poem, read the first lines, and then, just when I had their attention, stop. I'd ask them about expectations, and then I brought in the poems the next day, in the case of VCU. From Steve's second book, For Love of Common Words, here were three of the titles: The Boy Inside the Pumpkin, Rainy Millionaire Morning, For Love of Common Things. And then from The Cabinet Maker's Window, and before I get to those titles, I want to say one more thing about this book, The Cabinet Maker's Window. This book, Steve's third, and this book, To the Bramble and the Briar, came out in the same year, 2014. For several months before this book came out, I had seen many of the drafts and we went back and forth in letters, and it was a pretty thrilling project. I mean, it was just kind of amazing. And so I knew that this book was going on, and I knew that it was going to come out soon. But then in the mail, before this book came out, I got a package with this book. I had no idea that this book was going on. And here is the note that was in the package. So just imagine that you get this, you're reading somebody's poems on another book, and then you get this like new kid in the mail with this note. Sure hope you are all doing well this winter. It is so cold, right? Hope these poems keep you warm. Love, Steve. The reason that this affects me so much right now is that in the craft session, Steve named his session The Eland of Making, the eland being an antelope, and he talks so much at the beginning about the antelope having to outrun the cold, and then to reread this line, it is so cold, right? Hope these poems keep you warm. And I hope that's what we all do for each other when we light fires around the work and kind of set each other free to do what we have to do for ourselves and for the community. So titles from The Cabinet Maker's Window: Questions I Asked Death, Questions Death Asked Me. Days We Can't Play Black Sabbath. On the Rebel Flag Over My Neighbor's House. What I want to end with right here, because I just want to present gateways today, places to walk through. And there are times over the years that I've walked through the poems at one time, and then because so many things have gone on in our culture, in our country, in my own life, I'll walk through the same gateway, and there seems to be a different poem at the end. Same lines, but saying to me, you weren't ready to hear all of this before. Now, sit your child self down, hear what you heard before, and I will be behind you with my hand on your back, helping you to face some new things that you didn't have the words for before. It is my great pleasure to introduce my dear friend and extraordinary human being and poet, Steve Scafidi.
It's not often that as a writer you get to arrive somewhere the audience has been somewhat primed for you in such a loving kind of honored way. It's a little overwhelming because often if I give a reading, I arrive in a city where no one knows me and hardly anyone's there. And so this has been a real treat all day today. I work as a cabinet maker, and I don't get to talk about poetry much. I teach on occasion, so it was a real pleasure to be among writers today and talking about poetry and talking in a way where I didn't have to check myself, you know, because people are like, all right, yeah, okay, poetry, we know. You know, that's usually, and that's fine too, I get it. So it was a treat today. Thank you all very much for having me. So I'm just going to keep talking though. And so anyway, I want to thank Leslie, of course, for having me and making me feel so welcome and at home. And I want to thank the Visual Arts Center too for also having me. Being a cabinet maker, it's the perfect place, in my opinion, to read poems. In a place where people are busy making things. And for a shop, it's very clean, you know. I see the specific mess that I love. But thank you for having me here. It's a real honor. I'm going to read a new poem, partly because in our craft talk today, we were talking about the difficulties sometimes we have in writing poems. And so, as an expression of faith in us and something brand new, I'm just going to read an early draft. But I love it, and it helps me to keep going, so I'd like to share it with you. It's for my father's 80th birthday, and one thing to know is bull leapers started in Crete, I think, 4,000 years ago. It still happens today, you can see it on YouTube, where a man runs toward a charging bull, and right at the moment when they meet, the man leaps in the air and escapes, or else is maimed. And this still happens. Just things to know to hear this. The bull leaper's birthday. Leaping over the bull in the Bronze Age, my father was so young, so quick, flipping over the horns in the dust of his island. Now, almost 80 years old, he lies on the sofa and rests, and we speak of the lilies in the smoke trees of his garden. I don't ask about the bulls, the passage of almost 4,000 years, the scars from his work, but we talk and we laugh. My sisters float through the room, checking on him, kissing us, my niece and my mother also. For that is how it is when you are in luck, flying over what comes at you to kill you, and you flick your life through the air like a bird. I'm going to read a poem from The Cabinet Maker's Window. I'm going to be brief, by the way. I love poetry, but a little goes a long way, I find. If I look at my phone, it's to look at the time. I'm not checking my email. I just don't want to go over, because I hate when we do that. It happens, but okay. All right, so this is a poem. It doesn't need a whole lot of introduction. I think it's kind of a really common kind of poem where someone is standing beside a road near a dead animal. It seems to be a 20th century, or well, we're in the 21st, but very common way for a poem to happen. This is called Thank You, Lord, for the Dark Ablaze. And that's also the first line, so I'm going to say it again. Thank you, Lord, for the dark ablaze, for the deer gut busted, open, splayed on the gravel margin of the highway. To remind me and to horrify, which are the same when death comes to say anything. For dying is a song the body is learning. So thank you, Lord, for this enduring whir of days we ride, the way a chisel carves down deep as it glides. For being is a lathe, and we are the turning, curving shape of what I come to praise. So thank you, Lord, for the edge of light when the day is honed and all is bright behind the eyes. Just before waking, for dream is a fire we are the lake of, dream is the spire we are the church of, and the days turn so fast, meaning rattles hard and nearly breaks off. So thank you, Lord, for what arrives today, crashing down without a warning, like a pickup truck on the deer this morning, or the morning light lashing me while the sun flickers, churning through the trees, like a wheel splashing rays on the redbud, dappling this holy thing. I stand beneath, and I stand beneath, and that is all. For green is the mind of the spring returning, and dying a song the body is learning, which I will not sing or step to, although every day, oh, that is exactly what I do. Well, I'd like to read something of Leslie's today. I like to read something of someone else's at every reading, but particularly today and here, I'd like to read a poem by Leslie Scheel, who was my first poetry teacher. I was a student at VCU here, and I'd fallen in love before and elsewhere, but I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to speak of it. I didn't know hardly anything except the urge that I had to follow, which brought me here, and I learned so much here from Leslie and from all the poets here, and it was such a lucky accident to find myself here, and because here I am today. It's amazing how these things can work. This is a poem by Leslie called Knots. It's the epigraph is for my grandmother, Elvira Zinni Comandella. She takes my tangled necklaces on to her lap and with a straight pin works the knots, then places gold on lilac towels by dishes damp on the counter. Her beads, clear glass, the tarnished cross well worn, now hang on my blue nail. Her missal, full and black, recedes to backs of shelves instead of daily turned in shaking hands. The holy cards inside are still. Oh, how those saints were prayed to, the corners bent and frayed. What words did she, still young, use to speak her grief? Which saint spoke back about the son who died, 16? He dove and broke his neck. I'm pregnant, afraid, and dreaming her, another woman's voice on death and birth. Go on, she says, be strong. The saints stay put in pictures in her book. Instead, she comes alone, untangles fears that no one else can see, then lays them out. I love the phrase, then lays them out, the way also a prize fighter would do. All right, I'm going to read now a poem kind of that comes from there in a way in subject. My wife Kathleen is here, and I don't mean to embarrass her, but we've been together really since we were teenagers, and so I thought I knew who she was until we had a baby, and she had the baby. And then I couldn't believe it, and then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I witnessed it. I saw what happened, but, you know, I can't believe this has been going on for thousands of years. You know? And I just, you know, it's a real thinker, and you, I'm still in awe of it, and so, but if you're in awe of things, you should write poems. So, that's what I've done here. This is called Witness to the Work. If I could knock a house down with my crotch, or pull a train cross-country with a little string tied to my cock, well then that would be something. Not much, but at least something. If I could breathe in sharply now and swallow the western half of Portugal with its bright umbrellas and pointy cathedrals and its statues of Fernando Pessoa, it might be the same. If I could just think of the pain, I would fall over like a lettuce. As it is, a great and growing awe comes between us now, and we do not speak of it. Months pass, more months. She cries out suddenly, and her cries are deep like nothing I've ever heard, and the car zigzags, and we are there. Then the hours pass, filled with a difficult kind of grace, and she pushes that baby out of her, and the baby finally says, okay, and galumph, just like that. This lump of breath falls into the world and is lifted to her mother's breast. And she is crying, and people are snipping and cutting, saying, oh, isn't she? Isn't she? And the room is spinning hard, and this spinning spins the earth, and the earth spins faster. And I always thought that life was like a blue donkey named Disaster that we ride to death and whisper to. Now I know it is this bloody holy work. the mothers do. I'm going to read a poem from something we talked about today. I ended up writing a book about Abraham Lincoln, not knowing why, but doing it, a book of poems. And I called it to myself kind of a little magical biography of Abraham Lincoln, which I mentioned to a friend of mine at work. And he said, you mean you're making it up? I said, that's right. I wrote a whole bunches of them. I wrote like nearly 300 of them. But I've kept 45 in a book, and I'd like to read a few of them. The first I'll read is called The Coin. It concerns his son Robert, who was the only one of his children who made it into the 20th century, who was given in 1909 when the Lincoln penny was first issued, was handed the penny. He was the Secretary of War under Garfield and Arthur. He was quite a powerful man in his life. He was an enormous success. And he was present in 1922 when the Lincoln Memorial was dedicated. And there's a beautiful photograph of him at the memorial where you don't see a lot of candid shots, it seems to me, from the 1920s, where he's sitting in this marsh with all these chairs, dignitaries around, and he's looking over his shoulder. It's an old man looking over his shoulder. And that's all it is. It's a beautiful shot, though, that it's Abraham Lincoln's son at the memorial. Anyway, I'm not interested in Abraham Lincoln or anyone except as a person. So that was my intent to write these poems, to get at someone whom I might know or love. So this is a poem that takes place in 1909. It's called The Coin. The only souvenir Robert clung to was a copper penny from the first minting in 1909, where his father's face gazed in profile on one side, dark sheaves of wheat on the other, which was presented to him by President Taft one day on the rainy high steps of the Treasury. Every morning the coin was exchanged from watch pocket to watch pocket as he fumbled into the day's new suit. Sometimes in the middle of dinner, surrounded by ambassadors and high-ranking assistants to the various deputies of the War Department, he would reach quietly for the coin to graze the outline of the face with his thumb. Sometimes the difference between the official coin of the realm and his father's scraggly black beard was too much. And for days and weeks, he would not look there. Although in loneliness, four times he swallowed it, passed it, found it, and placed it again into his pocket. Once in Philadelphia, he lost it and backtracked the streets until dawn with a lantern looking down until he found it, shining in the deep groove between two cobblestones on Mercer Street. He talked to it in the dark of February, as if it could understand his longing. And when Robert died, this miniature portrait, worth so little, was tucked into his hand. It was just enough to pay the man who runs the rickety ferry that crosses the Potomac twice a day, even today, to Arlington Cemetery. And he is buried in Arlington Cemetery. The rest of his family is in Illinois. I'm going to keep with this book. This is just a moment from his life. It's called The Cemetery, and it's happened in Gettysburg, just before he gives his address. The cemetery. He could feel his pinky toe push through the hole in his sock in a rash form on his neck. He saw a hawk falling from a locust nearby, heard a steam train cry far off. He smelled the citrus perfumes of the dignitaries mixing with sweat. Mostly, though, he listened and bowed. Not far below him, underground, the leg bone of a boy from Ohio, buckles, teeth, and rounds. At the new cemetery in Pennsylvania, he waited to speak. The low clouds like the ceiling of a church about to be torn down or replaced with light, the crowd angry and somber, slowly pressing in the appointed speaker, talking too much of Rome and on beside the bones of the young laid down before him. He sensed a hair on his tongue, fiddled with his ear a moment, and then rose to speak. Well, the sky cleared and still continues to clear. The blues of the sky, a consecration, a testimony for this new church founded in Gettysburg in hope, and 272 words shouted over muddy earth. We talked a good bit today about writers kind of living in jeopardy at times or at all times, and it does seem that it's always true for us historically, perhaps, but I can feel it now. It seems that jeopardy feels very real. I just have a few more. So yeah, I have a poem here called Questions I Ask Death, Questions Death Ask Me. In the beginning of the poem, the speaker, me, I'm asking the questions, and then later it switches. And hopefully it's clear when it happens. Questions I Ask Death, Questions Death Ask Me. Why do you come around here all the time? Because the apple trees are bent down low with fruit and I am hunting like the bee. What are you looking for? A ribbon from my mother's hair when she was only three. I look in all the robin's nests and I ask the centipede. What is your real name? James Edward Smough III, Esquire, Viceroy of the Cold and the Cobra's Eye, Duke of Blades, Bullets, and Lords of what is broken in the mind. Why do you ask? Because my questions are like knives and I like waving them in your face. What are you afraid of exactly? The motionlessness of photographs, the quiet of the fair when all the rides are packed on trucks and pull away slowly, the sleeping of the bee and honey freezing in the hive when winter comes, winter, certain snakes, the suffering of those I love. I could go on. What are your dreams? To live beyond the days I love and carry you here on my shoulder, to show you this red ribbon I found, to fly, to peacefully grow older. So I do work in a cabinet shop, and this is the first poem in the book, and someone once said to me, that's a weird choice for the first poem. It doesn't seem, anyway. It is a poem written to, I've worked at this cabinet shop since I was a teenager, and I'm 52 now. So I've been there a long time, and a lot of other people have too. And it's the smell of the place, and the smells of the place are how I know it. So I wanted to write about this place with that in mind. Because I think for all of us, that the smell of home is particular, or of childhood is particular. It's sometimes hard to get across, but is undeniable for our understanding that I am there or not. So, sometimes there's a shit smell everywhere. That's the title, and that's the first line. Sometimes there's a shit smell everywhere when a breeze catches fumes rising from a crack in the septic. And hoo-wee, we say, who was that? Sometimes skunks fight under the floorboards at night. And when you walk in the morning, you begin to reek of it. And by the end of the day, you are fouled with that deep musk of skunk. And sometimes, sanding a small eucalyptus box made in China 100 years ago, the astringency of the medicine tree fills the barn and clears your head. We cook chicken and beans, venison stew and cornbread and sausage, and Bill's wife sent him to work today with 3 shrimps covered in coconut sauce. But mostly it is coffee in the air with a peppery, sharp odor of sawn walnut that smells purple. Mahogany dust has little claws that tear your eyes and grip at your insides. And sometimes we get what is called aspine, which stinks when you cut it, and you have to run away a little and say, damn. But since I was a boy, it is another smell, the ordinary fragrance of this place, like the pews of a chapel, something sober and holy, despite the cat piss or all the things we say. It smells like light, mostly. What stained glass looks like a story being told, the one where you live in one place until you die. Okay, I'm just gonna read 2 more, and I'll close. We live in a town called Summit Point, West Virginia, and there's a big orchard right behind our town where we wander through, and Have you ever wandered, any people here wander through orchards in our lives? Yes. It's a really lovely feeling. Like nature has become orderly in some way, but then it resists it as well as things happen. So this is just a small poem about a living thing that I may have invented, called The West Virginia Copperwing. An apple falls through the branches of the tree, and a green snake rises up flying with little wings, iridescent, as the evening begins in the orchard on the edge of town. Three deer whisper, grazing in the lane. You could be 11 or 12, standing with a stillness you have never before known, a halo of gnats around your head. And this could be any year in recorded history of human life. No one ever exactly remembers this moment or the next. We find ourselves in a royal pause, and then we go on asking, what's next? We fall towards sorrow and we forget. Someone captures the miraculous green snake with a net, pins it to a board. Someone sharpens a knife at the center of the earth, and it sounds like a wheel. Houses appear. Thousands of windows twinkle suddenly in the settling dark. Stillness, which was the god of being 11 or 12 on the edge of town, just before someone you love calls you home, and home being the god of this place, disappears. All of it disappears, and you are left, lost in the majestic green clockwork that is next. I want to read the poem that I think got me here, that poem in Tracy Smith's anthology called For the Last American Buffalo. I wanted to read that before I left, so I'm going to. I'm not sure how to preface this, except that writing long enough or doing the thing that you love long enough and with a great degree of happiness, even though there's struggle, sometimes rewards you with a sense of everlastingness. Maybe it's fleeting perhaps, that sense, but it's there, it has been there. I feel that way, that I have an imagination like you do, and I can't help but use it, and so far it's always there for me, like a beloved, to help you through. I don't know why I'm a writer except maybe that, the simple companionship of something mysterious like language, that I don't even know what's coming, but here it comes. And it's like a dream, and I find that feeling to be wonderful. And so I think this poem is trying to speak to that a little bit. For the Last American Buffalo, a friend of mine is a photographer. His name is Richard Sherman, and he took a haunting picture of a buffalo. For the Last American Buffalo, because words dazzle in the dizzy light of things, and the soul is like an animal, hunted and slow. This buffalo walks through me every night, as if I was some kind of prairie, and hunkers against the cold dark, snorting under the stars, while the fog of its breathing rises in the air. And it is the loneliest feeling I know, to approach it slowly, with my hand outstretched, to tenderly touch the heavy skull, furred and rough, and stroke that place, huge between its ears, where what I think and what it thinks are one singing thing, so quiet that when I wake, I seldom remember walking beside it and whispering in its ear quietly, passing the miles, the two of us, as if Cheyenne or the lights of San Francisco were our unlikely destination. And sometimes trains pass us and no one leans out hard in the dark, aiming to end us. And so we continue on somehow. And today, while the seismic quietness of the earth spun beneath my feet, and while the world, I guess, carried on, that lumbering thing moved heavy, thick, and dark through the dreams I believe we keep having, whether we sleep or not. And when you see it again, say I'm sorry for things you didn't do. And then offer it some sweet grass and tell it stories you remember from the star chamber of the womb, or at least the latest joke, something good to keep it company as otherwise it doesn't know you are here for love. And like the world tonight, doesn't really care whether we live or die. Tell it you do, and why. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I read one more? All right. See, I'm doing exactly the thing that someone should come up here and tackle me for. I may not. So if I don't, I do want to thank you now for having me. So I'm going to see how I feel, the looks on your faces. This is also a new poem. It commemorates something. My family used to go to this huge hotel in Pennsylvania, and one day I saw a raspberry growing from the top of a raspberry cane growing from a crotch of a maple tree way up high, and it was coming down and growing down to me, and I thought it was beautiful. But the hotel, this isn't in the poem, but and the poem's not finished, but I want you to know the hotel burned down. It was 150 years old, it's gone. And so I had stolen from there once a coffee cup. So all we have is this coffee cup. But I also now, I have this poem. So I have these two things from this place that are very important. The jewel. The raspberry cane rises up and falls over from the dirt in the lap of two branches of a maple tree, 30 feet above me. And the cane reaches down its long arm to me enough I may pull the fat ruby from its pale green finger and pluck it into my mouth. How did it happen that the vine rooted so high up in the tree? How did it happen that the berry came down to me in the garden of the hotel in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania, where I am only passing through in delight of this day? How did it happen, you ask, looking around? How does it happen the thief gets away with his life? Thank you.
Just really want to thank all of you for being here, and Steve, thank you so much. Thank you to Jordan Brown, the Director of Education here, who behind the scenes made so much of this happen too. Thank you.